Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Kyle Kemsel.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Life sometimes seems as if it's written by a comedian, and sometimes it seems as if it's written by a poet. It turns out the lives of our senior military commanders are being written by a guy who was fired from the staff of a soap opera for being too unrealistic. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll ask who seems stranger than even the strangest fiction. Plus, a real Milwaukee brewer talks about how he plays his game. And Carl Castle pitches his new action movie slash romantic comedy.
In the line of booty.
Pop some popcorn. Get ready for our quiz. It comes up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. New air raid sirens sounded this past hour in Tel Aviv. There are reports of explosions. Earlier today, a rocket fired from Gaza toward the Israeli city was intercepted and destroyed by Israel's missile defense batteries. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he is prepared to significantly expand operations against Hamas militants in Gaza who continue to fire rockets into Israeli territories. The BBC's Wera Davis reports from Gaza.
After targeting the Palestinian territory overnight from the air and from warships off the coast, Israel bombed two media buildings in the middle of Gaza City. Eight journalists were injured, but Israel justified the attack because it says Hamas was using antennae on the roofs for communication purposes. In the north of Gaza, two young children were also killed when their house was hit in another airstrike. The militants too stepped up the rocket fire. Hamas's military brigades said they'd fired several long-range missiles towards Tel Aviv and other Israeli cities.
The BBC's Wera Davis. As foreign diplomats discuss a possible ceasefire, U.S. lawmakers are talking about the crisis. Georgia's Saxby Chambliss is the ranking Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee. He says Hamas militants are hiding rocket launchers in schools and markets, and Israel cannot reach them with airstrikes.
If sending ground troops in is the only way they can clean out these nests of rockets being fired at them, you know, you can't blame them for doing it.
Chambliss spoke on Fox News Sunday. President Obama agrees. He says the United States backs Israel.
We are fully supportive of Israel's right to defend itself from missiles landing on people's homes and workplaces, and potentially killing civilians.
Mr. Obama says the U.S. is working to de-escalate the crisis. Meanwhile, he is in Thailand today for the start of an Asian tour that will take President Obama to Myanmar, also known as Burma, and Cambodia. NPR's Scott Horsley reports it's part of Mr. Obama's ongoing effort to focus attention on the Asia-Pacific.
President Obama will recognize the dramatic democratic reforms in Myanmar, also known as Burma, when he makes the first ever presidential visit to that country. He'll also take part in a regional summit meeting in Cambodia. He began his tour in Thailand, where he praised a diplomatic relationship that dates back almost 180 years.
Our men and women in uniform have stood together, and they've bled together. Our business people and our entrepreneurs work together to create jobs for both of our peoples.
Even as he tries to shine a spotlight on Asia, Mr. Obama's own attention has been drawn back to the conflict in the Middle East. He's been in daily contact with Israel's prime minister, while also working with other Middle Eastern leaders in an effort to de-escalate the fighting. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Bangkok, Thailand.
You're listening to NPR News in Washington. Spain has declared its opposition to the European Union's new draft budget. This includes cuts to aid and agriculture subsidies. Lauren Freyer reports from Madrid. The Spanish prime minister called the budget unacceptable.
Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy says an earlier version of the EU budget seemed like a good document to start talks. But I think the latest document represents a radical reduction to agricultural funds, Rajoy told a summit of Spanish, Portuguese, and Latin American leaders in the southern city of Cadiz. The EU's new seven-year draft budget would turn Spain into a net contributor for the first time, while at the same time the country mulls asking the EU for a bailout. Under the new budget, Spain would lose some $25 billion of EU aid for fisheries and agriculture. France also opposes the budget because of farm subsidy cuts, but Britain has vowed to veto the EU budget because the cuts don't go far enough. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
The company that owns the oil platform in the Gulf of Mexico that caught fire on Friday is looking for a missing worker. Two workers went missing from the oil rig 2 days ago, but searchers have discovered one body. The blast on Friday injured 11 people, four of them extremely seriously. The company that owns the rig is disputing reports from authorities who say the fire began when workers used a torch to cut open an oil line. Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi hopes lawmakers will come up with legislation avoiding the fiscal cliff. She tells ABC's This Week that can't happen without an increase on taxes for more affluent Americans. Republicans have pushed back, calling also for cuts to entitlement programs. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, an Allstate company offering Express Lane, a tool that looks up users' vehicle information when getting a car insurance quote. At esurance.com.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, I feel the same way. Very excited to be here at long last in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Milwaukee is, of course, famous for three things. The first is beer. And once you're finished with that, you can't remember the other two. We're going to be talking about Milwaukee, and we're going to be talking about beer, and we're going to be talking about Milwaukee beer with Randy Sprecher, whose beer has made Milwaukee famous all over again. And, of course, we're going to be talking with you, too, so give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It is now time to welcome our very first contestant. Hi, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Selena Sanford from Portland, Oregon.
Ah, Portland is a lovely place. Been there many times. Also fancies itself a beer city, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Posers. Pretenders. Here they make it by the vat. Well, welcome to our show, Selena. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, it's a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the host of this week's National Book Awards. It's Faith Saley.
Hi, Selena.
Next, it's the man behind Esquire's politics blog and a contributor to Grantland.com. It's Charlie Pierce is here.
Hi, Selena.
And it's a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and the host of My Grandmother's Ravioli Wednesdays on the Cooking Channel. It's Mo Rocca.
Hi, Selena.
Selena, you are going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will, of course, recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. You know your job. Explain or identify two of those. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice and your voicemail. Ready to go?
I am.
Let us go. Your first quote is a headline from the New York Post on Saturday.
Cloak and shag her.
Or maybe you'd prefer this from the New York Daily News on Tuesday.
In the line of booty.
So those are the headlines. What was the story?
General Petraeus, Paul of Broadwell's scandal.
Indeed, the Petraeus Affair, as it will be called in the history books.
Wasn't that an incomplete answer?
I'm sorry.
She only named two
people. Yes, I know. She only named two people. I mean, I should try to catch people up who aren't as up on this as our three panelists are. What, of course, happened is that General David Petraeus has joined the great fraternity of men brought down by a sex scandal. They're going to chisel his already chiseled face next to Tiger Woods, Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer, the four faces engraved into Mount Shagmore. And even though the CIA director resigned last week because of his affair with his biographer, Paula Broadwell, this is true, they apparently bonded while running in Afghanistan. How do you have an affair while running? It's like, first there were two sets of footprints on the sand, and then there was one. Yes, that's where we were humping. And how does the CIA director get caught in an affair? He took all the precautions. He stamped top secret on his emails. He should have worn, because he is ex-military, we know. He should have worn his adultery camo uniform. It has the pattern of a cheap motel bedsheet. It's like, Miss Broadwell, that bed you're lying in by yourself looks awfully lumpy.
It was so nice when the scandal began because it only took place in Washington and Afghanistan, but it was inevitable that Florida would get involved.
I know.
Florida is like a child having a tantrum, a hissy fit. They didn't dominate the election for more than 4 days. It only took them 4 days this time to count their votes. So then they had to get in on this. They couldn't resist.
It is also strange that a spy gets taken down for a sex scandal. I mean,
spies have sex.
Can you imagine if they treated all spies this way? It's like authorities have uncovered a trove of emails between James Bond and a woman named Pussy Galore. He's been asked to step down under allegations he may have had sex with everyone in the world.
I mean, why does any of this even matter? I mean, seriously, I mean, I feel like if all these reporters had actual sex lives, they wouldn't be spending all this time on this topic. It's all jealousy.
So let's remember
that an old guy like this is, you know, I mean, good for him.
We have to admit, though, in the end, it's nice that in the hierarchical world of the military, there was one general who was interested in the privates. That's what they said about General Petraeus. That's what they said about General Petraeus. He was always willing to do the grunt work.
Oh.
I think we better move on now, don't you? Here is your next quote. It's from Warren Buffett.
We're not going to permanently cripple ourselves because 535 people can't get along.
Mr. Buffett was referring to what impending financially crippling event?
Ooh. I think that would be Congress getting together on the fiscal cliff.
Yes, the fiscal cliff. That's right. Everybody is terrified of the fiscal cliff. No one is exactly sure what it is. It sounds like the most boring guy in your frat. Oh, you know, there's Drum Circle Doug, Lady Killer Bob. Oh, the guy with the glasses. That's fiscal cliff.
That's hysterical.
On January 1st, a series of terrible things will all happen at once. Tax rates will go up for everybody. The payroll tax cut will expire. There'll be massive forced cuts to defense and entitlements, and the nation will be plunged into recession. This will be the worst New Year's we've had since Dick Clark hosted New Year's Rocking Eve 6 months after he died.
Ouch. Too soon.
That's a credit to his persistence. He wouldn't...
It should be the fiscal bluff or the fiscal palisades.
I prefer the gentle fiscal incline.
The fiscal incline?
Well,
it's also wheelchair accessible that way.
No, that's right.
Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, we need to add a ramp to the fiscal cliff.
So anyway, so this is all going to happen. The president and the Republicans, they've been arguing in public. The president says, you know, hey, we got to raise taxes. The Republicans say, no. You have no mandate to raise taxes. Americans really prefer the ideas that Mitt Romney put forward. And it's like, oh, man, if only there was a way in which the American people could express their preference, somehow vote on which approach they preferred. I don't know. Here is your last quote.
Where are you, you spongy, yellow, delicious bastards?
What's that?
That was really Woody Harrelson in the 2009 movie Zombieland, Searching for Twinkies. That hopeless search became a reality for everyone this week when what company went under?
Hostess.
Yes, yes. All week, we stared in horror as the deadline approached and America nearly went over the Twinkie cliff. Hostess Incorporated, they make Twinkies, Ding Dongs, Wonder Bread, Fudge Puppies, Fat Crammers, and Lard Bursts. Said they would liquidate the company if striking workers didn't come back to work.
Ooh, what does that look like when it's liquidated? It's like neon colored.
And then Chris Christie ordered all the workers back to work.
Yeah. Damn it! He was in there, he was operating the machinery himself. The union, this is true, the union is the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers and Grain Millers International Union, also known as the Everything We Do Is Bad For You Union. They make Twinkies, candy, and cigarettes. It's like the League of Supervillains, Local 619. Carl, how did Selena do on our quiz?
Selena, congratulations. You had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing. Bye bye.
Bye.
We want to remind everyone that you can join us most weeks back home in Chicago at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. You can also find out about our Los Angeles show coming up in just a couple of weeks. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, this week the British royal family responded to accusations that Prince Charles is a horrible polluter. In fact, they say he is so committed to the environment, one of his cars is powered by what?
It's powered by compost. It's powered by, can you give me a clue? Is it some sort of recyclable?
Well, it took a while to get this going, but eventually they found a sommelier who could pair something with an Aston Martin.
So it's powered by wine.
Indeed. He has a car that's powered by wine, like much of the royal family. And that doesn't mean they just let Prince Philip drive it. No, it's actually powered by wine. Prince Charles is publicly committed to environmentalism, and of course he's also a guy who has a fleet of cars to travel between his 4 palaces. So the royal household put out a statement saying that he tries to be as responsible as possible. 3 of his cars powered by biodiesel, and one of them, a 40-year-old Aston Martin, is powered by, quote, waste wine.
Ooh, is that like fortified wine, like hobo wine?
No. This is the royal family. It's like a 2006 Burgundy. That was far from their best vintage. What is this? Manischewitz? Yeah. I don't...
That's great. It's great, though, because you could put Thunderbird in your Thunderbird.
That's true. I'm just imagining poor old Prince Philip with a siphon hose sneaking up to the car.
Oh, shoot, this is the one that runs on gasoline.
Yeah.
I don't care.
NPR comes from NPR stations and Chevrolet, makers of the Volt, an electric car that runs on electricity or gas to go farther. Details at ChevyVolt.com. Pimsleur language programs, whose unlimited series allow users to study to play Bluff the Listener Challenge on a Nook or desktop using interactive software at Barnes & Noble booksellers. And eSurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim. Online or via mobile at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time to play the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Cody from Minneapolis.
Hey, how are things in Minneapolis?
Just wonderful.
I'm glad to hear it. What do you do there?
I'm a tax accountant.
Really?
Really?
Tell me something, because everybody thinks, it's the stereotype, that accountants, especially tax accountants, are dull. Tell me something fascinating about your work.
Code section 48B is really great.
Oh, my heart raced just hearing you say it. Welcome to the show, Cody. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Cody's topic?
Help! I've run out of avuncular things to say.
We expect certain kinds of shortages, reservations to the hot new restaurant, the must-have toy at Christmas, good jokes on this show, but there are some things that you never expect to run out of. Our panelists are each going to tell you a story about a shockingly unexpected shortage. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's unceasingly avuncular voice on your home voicemail. Ready to play?
Ready.
Let's hear from Mo Rocca first off.
There's a sucker born every minute, except in Albania. After a 1997 pyramid scheme brought down the economy, the government set about making citizens more skeptical. Quote, it was an urgent situation that called for radical degullibilization among Albanians, said Education Minister Tony Dovolani. Everyday Albanians were taught to read fine print, not play three-card Monty on Tirana's famed boardwalk, and to instantly delete unsolicited emails from Nigeria. Albania is now known as the Show-Me Balkan State. But not all Albanians are happy. Birthday party magicians are out of work. Albanian children simply don't believe a woman could be sawed in half and survive. And Albania's hit version of Punk'd was canceled when producers could find no one who fell for their hoaxes. Said host Enver Belushi, quote, it's no fun living in the least gullible country on earth.
There's a credulity shortage in Albania. Too suspicious there now. Your next story of a demand meeting supply comes from Faith Saley.
Some things in life are indestructibly ubiquitous, like cockroaches and D-list celebrities, right? Well, it turns out that in the wilds of Australia, it's easier to find a Baldwin brother than a roach, much to the dismay of the producers of the reality show, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. The show, which, like Vermin, somehow survives to skitter into production season after season, invites has-beens into the jungle to prove their mettle by doing such impressively stupid things as eating ostrich anus and rummaging through dung. A recent drought has created a scarcity of cockroaches to dump on the personalities, and producers are scurrying to get the 140,000 bugs they need. The problem is that these insects take 4 months to be bred, but the celebrities can't wait that long to reignite their careers in the most disgusting way possible.
A cockroach shortage. Striking a reality show in Australia, and your last story of an unexpected shortage comes from Mr. Charlie Pierce.
On December 16th, the Green Bay Packers will go down to Chicago and play the Bears in a game that may decide the championship of the NFC Central Division and is, in any case, the league's greatest historical rivalry in both football and parking lot debauchery. A crisis occurred this week, however, that seemed to threaten one of the Packers' most talismanic symbols in the run-up to the big game. There very nearly was a cheesehead shortage. The trademark wedge-shaped hats beloved of Green Bay fans are manufactured by a company located in St. Francis, Wisconsin. Last week, due to a labor dispute that blew up in several trucking companies in South Carolina, whence the foam rubber comes to Wisconsin, there was a real possibility that the manufacturer would run out of raw cheesehead material within the next 3 weeks. That would put the supply of cheeseheads for the Bears game at risk. But when sober, Packer fans are nothing if not resourceful. And when news of the potential cheesehead shortage hit the news, dozens of independent entrepreneurs sprang into action. People fashioned cheeseheads out of cheddar, Swiss, and even, yes, Chevre. Vlad Flamy of Ashland, like hundreds of other cheeseheads, bought a 25-pound wedge of Gouda at one of the emergency cheese stands set up across the state, took out the old electric carving knife, and made himself a hat. Biggest problem was to cut out the hole in which my head could fit, said Flamy. Bernie Kilpatrick, who has gone to Packer games with Plamey since 1971, was impressed by his old friend's ingenuity, but said that certain traveling adjustments might have to be made. I'm not driving all the way down to Chicago in a car with the heater going and a guy wearing a giant piece of cheese on his head.
All right. Here are your choices. From Mo Rocca. In Albania, there's such a shortage of credulous, easily fooled people that they can't do their version of punked anymore. From Faith Saley, there aren't enough cockroaches to torment the has-been celebrities, and I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Or from Charlie Pierce, they're running out of cheese heads here in Wisconsin. The actual heads, not the people. Which of these is the real story of a surprising shortage in the week's news?
I'm going to go with C.
So you're going to go with C. That would be Charlie's story of cheese heads.
Correct.
Because there are not enough foam cheese heads. People are making cheese heads out of cheese. I think you can tell the audience here does not approve of your choice. But you are welcome to stick to it. They can't reach you. You're on the phone.
I'll switch to Faith's story.
You're switching to Faith's story.
Why? What's wrong, what's wrong with my story?
And so here you are. You are choosing then Faith's story of the shortage of cockroaches in Australia, which are troubling the reality show producers. Well, we spoke to somebody who is familiar with this particular tragedy.
There's been a drought for quite a while, and they don't have enough cockroaches for the show, yeah?
That was Natalia Zanks, CEO of Zodiac USA, the creator and producer of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in Australia, talking about the cockroach shortage. Congratulations, Cody. You got it right. You're the point for Faith. You've won our prize. Carl will record his voice on your voicemail. Well done.
Thanks, Cody.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing. And thank you, audience, for steering him straight.
You better look out. Cause your good thing's about to run out. You better look out. Cause your good thing's about to run out.
And now the game where we invite somebody who does something interesting on to do something that doesn't interest him. This is Milwaukee. It's a beer town. That's why Randy Sprecher came here years ago to make beer for one of the big breweries. But he didn't much like the beer he was making, so he founded his own brewery. And now his friends keep showing up at his door all the time with really lame excuses. Randy Sprecher, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Great to see you. They like you. They've had your beer. So tell me the story. Is it true that you, years ago, worked for one of the big breweries here in town, the now-defunct Pabst Brewery?
Right? That's right. The Pabst Brewery came out here in 1980 from the West Coast, and it was quite an experience there. Somebody like myself, a brewing supervisor, we were doing like 7 12s a week at times, 84 hours a week.
What does 7 12s mean?
Well, 7 days a week, 12 hours
a day.
Oh,
okay, all right.
So, when you do that much work, you go, I might as well be doing this for ourselves, you know, what
really?
The heck, you know. I had actually thought about doing the beer thing. Clear back in 74, I wrote the California ABC people about inquiring about having a brewery license, and they were, well, where's the railroad and $50 million or whatever to get started, you know? And I said, no, I'm going to make a little 500-gallon or maybe 1,000-gallon self-made system or something and go from there. And they were going, what the heck is this guy talking about?
Really?
You know, that sounds a little crazy at those days. And then, of course, back then I also was starting to dabble with root beer recipes.
Really?
And, yeah.
These days, would you say it's true that your company, Sprecher, named for you, is more known for its root beer and sodas than it is for its beer?
Well, it certainly is across the nation. We aren't known for beer across the nation so much, but we certainly are known for the root beer. And, of course, my passion is the beer. Always enjoy a nice root beer as well. A draft root beer sometimes is pretty satisfying.
Under what circumstances would that be satisfying? So you're working at Pabst, and what I like to think, in fact, I took a tour of your brewery years ago, and they kind of implied that you were at Pabst, and you liked it, except you thought the beer tasted bad, and you thought this needed to be fixed.
I don't think it tastes bad. I just have preference for other beers. Having spent 18 months in Bavaria in the 60s in the military, I had a real palate for European beer, and Pabst was making what we call adjunct beer. However, we were...
Wait a minute. Is that what you call it?
That's what the industry calls it. It's
adjunct
when you add
beer?
Adjunct is another ingredient. Adjunct, yeah. You know, the more you stir, the less the junk. But anyway, right, it's a name for other types of ingredients, you know, that add to the alcohol, keep the color light and the body light. And so American light beer, light lager we'd call it, is what was most popular.
You've drunk a lot of beer, I'm guessing, in your life, professionally.
I guess I've had my share.
What is? I know there's so many different varieties and flavors now. What is the worst beer you've ever had?
Oh, well, that's a bad thing to say. You know, it's like, how about, usually you want to know the best. I won't say what's the worst, but there are certainly some beers out there. Well, I know there's a brewery that's defunct now, so I can talk about them. The old Schaefer Brewery over by Cleveland, I think. And they had some pretty... It was tough.
It all depends how you drink it. It depends how you drink it, though. That tastes really great in a funnel. Don't use a glass. Use a funnel. That's how you do it. Yeah. Whatever happened to shotgunning, by the way? I know that that's not responsible behavior, but people used to do something called shotgunning. Do you remember that?
Well, actually, that was after my time, and in between here, and it's probably gone again. I don't know. I'd get some college kids here to talk about how they do it. Shotgunning, I guess, was something where you have two holes. You see how Miller's trying to punch another hole to go faster or something?
Yeah.
You know, it's pouring a glass and enjoying a glass. But shotgunning, I guess I didn't have the experience. I like my beer in a glass, thank you.
Yeah. One thing I'm curious about, everybody knows how to talk like a wine snob, even if you're not one. You know how they talk. Oh, it has floral notes of raspberry, whatever you say. Teach us how to talk like a beer snob. If I wanted to show off my knowledge of beer and I take a sip of beer,
you burp.
It doesn't have to be true, but just tell me what sort of things I should talk about. What should I say?
Well, the beer snob today, I guess, would be more of the Belgian with the fine ales, with long aged and have refined bouquets and a beautiful head on it to seduce you into try to drink some more of this.
You know? And you could be head of the CIA and get drunk.
Why? This beer is so seductive it wants to write my biography. Hey, I know that you have a lot of varieties of beer and a lot of varieties of sodas. Have you ever tried something that totally was a failure?
In the beer and soda?
Yeah.
Well, a failure in the sense that it doesn't sell or have a following, that's not
No, I'm talking about failure like you make a batch, you drink it, you put it down, you say, listen, no one must ever know. That's what I'm talking about.
Early on, as a home brewer and stuff, there were batches that you would go, gosh, do we have any animals that might drink this? You know, put it out back, you know.
Why are you so svelte for someone who drinks a lot of beer?
You know what? I've been working at it. It's hard work when you get older.
Yeah, how do you do that?
I drink less, work out a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So swimming, I've been doing my share of swimming. I love swimming.
In beer?
In beer. low carbonated beer, because when it foams up too much, then you can't see where you're going.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And it gets kind of gassy. You want oxygen, not CO2. You know?
Then everybody else gets out of the pool and it's terrible.
I like that. It's like turn head to breathe, put head down to drink. Turn head to breathe. That's pretty much how half our audience spends their evenings anyway. So why not just swim in it?
When you're invited to a party and it's BYOB, is that a lot of pressure?
The biggest pressure is what to bring and how much. But. You always can bring, we make quite a range of things, so I know we got something for most palates, and it depends what kind of party you're going to, I guess, which you're going to come up with.
So. What if you're going to the Republican Party? What kind of beer do you need?
At this point, they just need a lot of it.
Yeah, they need a lot of it.
Well, Randy Sprecher, we are delighted to talk to you about beer, but in fact, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Prepare you sinners to receive the sharp edge of God's judgment.
Uh-oh.
You brew beer and make wine and brandy, which means that Carrie A. Nation, the famous and famously violent prohibitionist of the 19th century, would have loathed you. We're going to ask you three questions about the life and career of Carrie Nation. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine.
Well, I'm glad you picked a favorite person of mine. I've known him for years.
Oh, sure. Carl, who is Randy Sprecher playing for?
Randy is playing for Dan Seidner from Wauwatosa, Wisconsin.
All right. Now you know that Carrie Nation was the famous, most famous of the temperance activists or the prohibitionists. Her habit was to go into bars and smash bottles with hatchets, right? Famously.
Well, I'm finding out.
Yeah, you are. Okay.
Where were the police?
She referred to herself as what? A hatchet-wielding, bustle-wearing scourge of drinkers, tipplers, and sippers. B, a hellish vision drawn from the sickest nightmares of the drinking man. Or C, a bulldog running along at the feet of Jesus, barking at what he doesn't like.
No, that's quite a list of choices.
It is.
I'll tell you, that's... I guess, since she did use the hatchet, let's go with number one.
You're going to go
with
the hatchet-wielding, bustle-wearing...
Well, you said that
she
whacked those bottles,
she did.
So...
Actually, no, she said C, a bulldog running along the feet of Jesus. She was propelled by her religious faith, Ms. Nation was. Next question.
Gosh.
Once she got involved in the temperance cause, Ms. Nation liked to walk into bars and address the bartenders how? Was it A, good morning, destroyer of men's souls? B, man, I would kill for a drink. Or C, duck.
Well, I don't know. Okay, we can go with A or C, but Doc, she's got the axe, right? The hatchet?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we'll go with... Okay. All right. Audience is generally right, right? We'll go
Always.
With the majority. We'll go with A.
You're going to go with A, and they are right, and you were right. It was good morning, Detroit, my soul. It was only later that she started going in and smashing the bottles with a hatchet. Later in life, Ms. Nation needed money to support her activities. How did she raise the money? A, she auctioned off the chance to watch her take a drink. B, she sold souvenir hatchets. Or C, she sold photos of herself in a swimsuit.
I'm going to go with B, I think, on
yeah.
that one. The swimsuit, who knows what you're going to get there? Holy
oh,
cow.
Yeah. It was 1910. It really wouldn't have done much.
Could drive you to drinking. You know?
The answer is you're choosing B, selling souvenir hatchets.
Let's try that one.
That's right. That's what she did. She was famous for her hatchet. Souvenir hatchet. Yeah. Carl, how did Randy Sprecher do in our quiz?
Randy had two correct answers, so he wins for Dan Seidler.
Well done. Randy Sprecher is the award-winning beer meister at the Sprecher Brewery here in Milwaukee. Randy Sprecher, thank you so much for joining us. In just a minute, Carl devours some speed stick. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to take part. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained at 1-800-HARDWOOD. The Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And Progressive, which offers the ability to quote, buy, and manage policies with the Progressive mobile app. Learn more at progressive.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
And WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Charlie Pierce, Mo Rocca, and Faith Saley. And here again is your host at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl admits his favorite Milwaukee brewer is Ryman Braun. It's a listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Faith, finally, some of the stringent TSA regulations are being relaxed. This week it was announced we'd once again be allowed to bring what on airplanes?
Is it a liquid of some sort?
It's got a liquid in it. And sometimes a little mermaid, or sometimes a little Statue of Liberty. Yes, a snow globe. It's been years, of course, since the last snow globe attack. Your snow globes must fit into your little Ziploc bag with your other liquids and gels. So, to sure to make everything fits, try filling the snow globe with your toothpaste. And you know, just to be sure, if you're going to, you know, travel with a snow globe, make sure it's like your snow over Paris snow globe, rather than your treasured snow over my hero Osama bin Laden.
I just was in Mexico, and the things you cannot take on a plane were kind of comical, like a tennis racket was displayed there.
Well, you never know what'll happen.
Yeah.
What else?
An iron. You cannot take
you
an
mean
iron.
Like a you mean like a flat iron or a putter?
As in to iron your clothes.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
Also that thing you use like when you get a flat tire, like that giant. I'm serious.
Wait. You're surprised they won't let you bring a lug wrench on an airplane?
Well, why would you want to bring a? I mean, I don't. Yeah.
I think that's the point.
And in India, you can't bring chili powder.
Really?
This is true.
I did not know that.
It's not funny, but it's true.
Charlie, there's a lot of interest in Abraham Lincoln because of the new movie out. That might explain the release of a new letter the young Lincoln sent to a sweetheart in which we learned Lincoln might have invented what now classic technique.
Well, those of us who knew him back when his younger, wilder days used to call it the stovepipe.
He was writing to his sweetheart who he didn't want to be his sweetheart anymore.
Oh, he's a master of the brush-off?
Not the brush-off, but a particular way of doing it.
Yes, it's not you, it's me.
Right.
That was his deal.
Abraham Lincoln might have invented that brush-off technique, it's not you, it's me. The letter shows the great emancipator setting himself free. So at the time, he was a poor young lawyer in Springfield. Mary Owens was the girl back home he'd agreed to marry before realizing that he just wasn't that into her. So he broke it off in a letter.
He's just not that into you.
So he broke it off in a letter, which is an old-timey way of dumping someone via text. First of all, he called her Friend Mary.
Oh, ow.
Oh, bad start.
47 burns. Oh, man. Oh. She had been planning to come to Springfield to see him, and he said, quote, "You'd better not do it. You have not been accustomed to hardship, and it may be more severe than you now imagine." He also said he needed more space and wanted to concentrate on his rail splitting. Faith, a new study by Stanford University researchers suggests that what is happening to the human race?
Believe it or not.
Is there a wrong answer to this question?
Right, that's a very exciting.
Well, we're clearly getting fatter, but I don't think that's the answer.
No, we knew that.
Right. We're getting smarter?
Not at all.
Oh. I guess we're getting dumber,
demonstrated
that.
The study was published in the journal Trends in Genetics and was too hard to read because of all the big words.
What?
But here's a summary. Generation after generation, we're getting dumber, which really means that as we evolve, fewer and fewer people will believe in evolution. This is the reason, and this is from, you know, a geneticist. The reason is that there's nothing in our modern environment compared to the prehistoric environment in which we evolved that weeds out dumber people, right? In prehistory, if you were born stupid or reckless, you'd get eaten or you would starve. Now, you get to host The Apprentice.
But I did read that our IQs are going up.
But they're being calculated by dumb people.
Right.
That don't know math.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been basically been graded on a curve since the Renaissance. Yeah.
The geneticist who did the study, Dr. Gerald Crabtree, suggested we can turn back the tide of devolution if women just start sleeping with really smart guys like geneticists. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the contact us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Los Angeles at the Nokia Theater on December 6th. And check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to name your Washington sex scandal. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Vivian from Springfield, Vermont.
Hey, how are things in Springfield?
Cold.
Oh, yeah. What do you do there?
I'm a horse.
I'm sorry.
You're a horse? Okay, I'm assuming there's more.
What we heard you say is that you were a horse. I'm guessing that's that's either not true or the most wonderful thing I've ever heard.
She's going to tap out her answers.
Are you?
Yes, and Mr. Ed is my father.
Yeah.
I'm a horse trainer.
Your horse trainer.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I wanted to brush your hair. Now I don't.
Yeah.
I wanted to know if she could swing a baseball bat with her teeth.
I got an apple here, but I guess you won't be wanting it. Well, welcome to the show, Vivian. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related...
Poor Vivian.
Poor Vivian. You just wanted to play a game and win Carl's voice, and we're...
And we just want her to whinny.
I'll brush your hair, Vivian.
Knock three times with your hoof if you want to keep playing. I'm sorry. Here we go, Vivian. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks, but he's not going to finish it. That is your job. Do that two times out of three. You'll win our prize, Carl's voice, on your voicemail. In your barn?
Yeah.
And, you ready to play?
I am.
All right.
If you're not, just say nay.
Yeah. All right.
Giddy up. Let's get on with
All
this
right.
game.
Yeah. Here is your first limerick.
Oh, good.
All right, here is your first limerick. Here we go.
Since garlic we're known to secrete, why not try out some foods that are sweet? Open your pores with a sweet smell of s'mores, a deodorant that you can
eat.
Yes, eat. Very good. We are good at eating, not so good at bathing, so why not make your pie hole your deodorant hole? That's the idea behind Dio perfume candy, which deodorizes you from the inside out. You eat it a while later, you smell good. That's the idea. Just don't get it confused and start thinking you can freshen your breath by shoving Tic Tacs in your armpits. Here is your next limerick.
It sounds like a plan by Cruella, worse than measles and mumps and rubella. My hazelnut spread will be priced past my head. They're raising the tax on...
Nutella.
Yes! Nutella! When you see the Brewers play, do you guys yell, "It's a curveball!" Cheaters. Big room of cheaters. Yes, Nutella. A new French tax on fattening palm oil products is quadrupling the price of a jar of Nutella, the chocolate hazelnut spread. We all know that it is pure and good and should be a basic human right, like air or water. They're treating Nutella the way we Americans treat cigarettes. The next thing you know, taxing it to make it more expensive to keep people away from it. Next thing you know, there'll be Surgeon General warnings on the package. May cause happiness in pregnant women. Do not eat with bananas unless you want something awesome. Here is your last limerick.
On my laptop, I'm earning my bread. A commute isn't something I dread. I turn off my beeper, because now I'm a sleeper. My office is also my...
bed.
Bed, yes! Because of the global outsourcing of companies, the Wall Street Journal reported this week that more and more people are opting to work from their beds so as to be accessible at all times of day, night and day, and across global time zones. This makes inappropriate affairs with coworkers that much easier, while making all staff meetings weirder. Carl, how did Vivian do in our quiz?
Vivian, you had a perfect game. 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done. Thank you, Vivian.
She gets Carl's voice on her answering machines and a carrot.
Yes, very good. Thank you so much, Vivian. Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players has 60 seconds to answer as many questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlotte Pierce and Faith Saley have a tie for the lead, Peter. Each of them has 3 points, and Mo Rocca has 2.
All right. Mo, you're in third place, so you'll go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Thursday, BP agreed to plead guilty to negligence and misconduct charges and pay a record $4.5 billion fine in connection with the blank.
Deepwater Horizon spill.
Yes. Yeah. On Wednesday, President Obama held his first blank since the election.
Press conference.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just weeks after Windows 8 debuted, the executive in charge of Windows at blank abruptly departed on Monday.
Microsoft.
Yes, and a huge global recall on Wednesday. Blank recalled 2.77 million Priuses this week.
Toyota.
Right. Researchers in Taiwan have discovered that blanking is an effective way of guarding against the flu.
Oh, geez. Sleeping?
No, smoking meth.
Oh.
Actress Selena Gomez broke the heart of teen pop star Blank this week by dumping him.
Justin Bieber.
It's not you, it's yo. The blue and white gingham dress Judy Garland wore in the movie Blank sold for $480,000 at an auction last weekend.
The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, thanks to a daylight savings time miracle, an Ohio man blanked.
Something interesting happened. Because of daylight savings time, he missed getting hit by a train.
No. He was arrested twice for 2 separate DUIs at exactly the same time.
Wow.
This is what happened. It's 1:08 a.m. last Saturday night. Niles Gammon is stopped for drunk driving. He's arrested and released in the custody of a friend. An hour goes by. The same cop who arrested him driving his patrol car in the parking lot when some guy backs right into him.
Oh.
It's Niles Gammon, still drunk. And because the clocks had just been turned back, he was arrested again at 1:08 a.m. Gammon says he's learned his lesson and also found out his car is a time machine. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points and the lead.
Well done. All right. Okay. We have flipped a coin and Faith is elected to go second. You're up next. Here we go. On Thursday, Xi Jinping took over as the new leader of Blank.
China.
Yes. On Wednesday, Blank announced that she would stay on as House Minority Leader.
Nancy Pelosi.
Right. In his first press conference since the election, President Obama defended the work of U.N. Ambassador Blank.
Susan Rice.
Right. Wanted by police in Belize, the man behind the computer security software company Blank went into hiding.
McAfee?
Yes. Now that the election is over, an Indiana man has finally admitted that his new Blank might not have been a good idea.
Romney tattoo on his face.
Yes, the Romney Ryan logo right there. This week, People Magazine named Channing Tatum of the movie Magic Mike this year's Blank.
Sexiest man alive.
Yes, indeed. This week, Lance Armstrong officially cut ties with his cancer-fighting charity Blank.
Oh, Livestrong.
Yes, a California teen is recovering after she blanked while talking on her cell phone.
Stepped into a nest of rattlesnakes.
Yes, indeed. Very good. Elephant, of course, was walking around, talking on her cell phone. Then, oh my God, there are rattlesnakes. Fortunately, she got great service in the rattlesnake pit, and she was able to call for help and get to the hospital. Carl, I think Faith did really well on that, did she?
A perfect round, Peter. 8 correct answers,
16
points.
Oh, my God.
She has 19 points and the lead.
Here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. Employees of Target and other retailers posted petitions online in an attempt to stop their stores from starting their blanks on Thanksgiving Day.
Black Friday?
Yeah, the Black Friday sales. Yeah. On Thursday, President Obama arrived in New York to tour the areas hardest hit by blank.
Superstorm Sandy.
Right. Hostilities erupted between Israel and militants as blank as they both launched attacks against each other.
Oh, Gaza.
Right. Chris Collins, a newly elected Republican member of Congress from New York, experienced some freshman awkwardness this week when he blanked.
Conceited.
No. When he showed up at a breakfast meeting for the Democrats. Comedian Janine Garofalo was surprised to discover this week that she has been blank for 20 years.
Married.
Yes. Baseball fans in Miami were enraged after five key players were traded by the blanks on Wednesday.
The Marlins.
Right. A college student in Rhode Island had to be rescued by the fire department after she blanked.
Fell into a nest of rattlesnakes.
No, after she got stuck between two buildings.
Horizontally.
Yes. Sure, the alley was only 8 inches wide, but young, drunk Courtney Malloy was pretty sure that if she ran real fast, she could make it through. She didn't. Firefighters arrived to find her, and this is true, wedged in the crease horizontally and 2 feet off the ground. She was like, imagine that. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to tie?
Not Charlie even. Needed 8 correct answers to tie, but he had just 5 correct answers. So with 19 points, Faith Seeley is this week's champion.
Well done, Faith.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict what will be the next scandal to be uncovered as the FBI continues to go through everybody's email. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need. On the web at rwjf.org, Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, our benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is America's sweetheart, Leah the Menzer. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to the crew at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical directions from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Mr. Ian Chillog, and of course the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is, wait for it, oh no, we cannot stand the suspense, Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next scandal uncovered by the FBI? Morocco.
Hot, sexy, steaming emails between Ron Paul and Freedom.
Faith Saley.
In light of this week's Elmo email scandal, the FBI will dig into all Muppet drop boxes and uncover steamy emails between Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy in which she declares that she is the other white meat.
Whoa!
And Charlie Pierce!
The discovery that over the last 5 years, Paul Ryan has ordered 125 Ayn Rand blow-up dolls from Grover Norquist's House of Fun.
Well, if the FBI discovers any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks for listening to Mo Rocca, Faith Stanley, Charlie Pierce. Thanks this week to Dave Edwards and Cynthia Akey at WDWM, Public Radio Milwaukee. Thanks to our fabulous audience at Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hello, Milwaukee!
Thanks all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.
Nashville International Airport connects Middle Tennessee travelers to the world. BNA seeks to learn about the places travelers need to go and improve air service options to take them there. In fact, Nashville International Airport has new nonstop flights to Boston, New York City, Los Angeles, and Cleveland. More information is at flynashville.com, including opportunities for airport-related updates and traveler comments. flynashville.com. Today's broadcast on Nashville Public Radio is supported by our listeners and by Indomina Releasing, presenting Holy Motors, a film by Leos Carrick about the mysterious appointments of Monsieur Oscar. Part monster movie, romantic drama, musical, and crime thriller, now playing at the Belcourt Theater.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio. 91.5 WTML Tullahoma and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.